Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the fourth In Inches podcast with your hosts, Stuart Love, Sukhdeep Pooney, and Ryan Edwardson. Well, guys, I don't actually have to introduce the podcast now because we've got an absolutely brain-melting, rocking intro. So let's not cut to the chase. Sukhdeep, how you doing, my boy?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thanks. Busy with a lot of the podcasts, but as I've said before,
you're only doing three shows a week now, so it's you're doing well.
I'm actually doing one on Friday, so make that four.
And Saturday, but we'll announce that later.
Yeah, but I just want to say, like, yes, I'm doing a lot of podcasts, but at the same time, I'm not at the forefront of all of them. I mean, there's a lot of hard work going in from yourself, Ryan, Roger, and obviously Nick and Tristan as well. So, and Kira, so we're all pulling together and doing our bit. It just so happens, obviously, the way my sort of work-life balance is, I'm able to accommodate them at the moment. You know, whilst the iron is hot, I'm going to keep doing as much as I can. If I find it's going to get too much, then, you know, I'll come crying to you, I guess.
That's good. Ryan, obviously, welcome to the podcast. This is your second show, but we messaged you earlier, we never heard from you, and we just got a little text saying, I'm in the lab. Are you doing the new COVID cure? What is your role in a lab?
No, I'm not designing the new COVID cure, I'm afraid. Some very small people just down the hall are, but it's not me.
No, that's awesome. You're designing some amazing new technology just for these players that get ACLs and get injured, and I can just imagine you're working away there. But thank you so much for you guys being part of this podcast. Ryan, again, as your second show, we're so grateful to be here. But for everyone, you're going to be wondering, yes, Stuart Love was in London. Why was he in London? Why is he not social distancing? But I can assure you guys, I contacted the Metropolitan Police, went down. I was with Paul Brown. I never seen Paul on Friday and Saturday. We met up for a little bit on Sunday. But before I go into that, I took a little journey out to Wembley on Sunday morning because it should have been NFL game day. And it was an emotional time. I started doing the NFL games in 2007, the first game, obviously, the Dolphins at Wembley. And then over the last 3-4 years, I've built up this most wonderful relationship with Sukhdeep Pooney and Oli Oro. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to take the pilgrimage. I'm going to go out to Wembley on my own. The tube, everything was, it was so quiet, it was scary. And just walk up Wembley Way and just reminisce with all the fans, because this is for yous listeners. Yous listen to this podcast because yous are fans of the NFL. And this year we've had no London games. And I didn't actually expect to be as emotional as I was. And I made a few videos for NFL UK on Facebook and Twitter. And then obviously I sent out to my co-host and business partner, Sukhdeep and Oli. And it was just crazy. Wembley was dead. There was nobody there. And all I can imagine was the tailgating, the fans, the ticket touts, all the nonsense. But Sukh, you got quite a bit emotional as well.
Yeah, there were so many memories. I mean, one of the videos you sent me, I think it was the bit where you described it. I won't go into exactly where it was, but a certain place where we met a certain player. You said, oh, where's Kira with X, you know, X player? And I was just like, wow. It just brought it all back, because I literally was pictured in that moment, the whole journey I had with my boy last year. And I was just like, it did get to me, because obviously that was the first time I took him to have any sort of experience with the NFL live. And it was one of them where we had a conversation after that, and he's like, Daddy, I want to come every year. And I was like, of course, son. And
oh man,
the first year, you know, obviously this happens, and then obviously COVID strikes. And I know there's more important things going on in the world. I mean, we've had, you know, lots of ups and downs this year, but just something like that would have been, you know, really nice to just enjoy, especially with my boy now, as he's getting older and really, really, you know, loving the game. I just wanted to sort of have that experience with him again. So it did bring a lump to my throat. And then obviously just remembering, you even showed a video of the first time we'd met. This is going to sound like we're like ex-lovers or something, but it was...
Yeah, but I literally walked down the steps and I pointed over to exactly where I came up to meet Ollie, and I met you and your son sat in the Wembley area.
Yeah. But we'd also, I mean, before that, obviously we've known each other 3 years. We met each other sort of in that area for the first time as well. So it was just like, wow, that's crazy, man.
And it was just a really bizarre thing. I got up. I mean, as soon as I was walking up Wembley Way, I thought about everybody. Liz Bhandari, I was thinking about Jack Humphrey. I was thinking about Neil Elliott, Mark Holden, the NFL lads, you know, Peter Schreinberger. Like, there was just so many people within the NFL UK community that are just amazing. I was like, wow. And it's just weird standing here, and it's not NFL weekend. But apart from that, I was down in London. I was with the massive loudmouth Paul Brown, which I absolutely love. But so enough about waffling about the love of obviously being down in London with Paul Brown and all this stuff, which is actually exciting because I got to actually spray champagne on his head. We're big NFL fans, Steelers, Browns. And through that, I've been invited to go on to CBS tomorrow at 2 p.m. On Pittsburgh TV and do an interview, which will be shown this weekend. So this podcast will be getting a massive plug. But for our listeners, we don't want to hear about me and Sook absolutely breaking our hearts about the London games and how much we love each other. And obviously, Ryan, you're going to be part of this. Hopefully,
yeah, man.
Next year.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You're going to be meeting up with a podcast meetup, but we're going to start what is week six. And for me to say that the Tennessee Titans, I mean, wow. I mean, Derrick Henry,
the biggest Scottish man.
Should be Scottish.
Yeah,
it should be Scottish, but. You know, the Tennessee Titans week six win over the Houston Texans. I mean, it was just, was that a roller coaster win? Was it? It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. Everything looked to be going smoothly with the Titans. I mean, they were 21-10 going into that halftime. But when the wheels came off that second part of the game, the Titans end up blowing a lead en route to being 36-29 with just under 2 minutes remaining in regulation. I've watched this game about two or three times on Game Pass, and I watched this game with Paul Brown. Everything looked to be going smoothly with the Titans, but Ryan Tannehill, he went to work. I mean, seriously, that drive that resulted in a game-trying touchdown, four seconds left, was absolutely incredible. With momentum on their side in overtime, the Titans won the coin toss and finished off the Texans with a touchdown in the opening possession of extra time. I mean, look at this win. I mean, what did it teach us tonight? I mean, even the AFC South as a whole, the MVP conversation, though, is Ryan Tannehill a fluke or is he an MVP candidate? And this is something that I hope that for people listening to us tonight, you can get us on social media. I'll do a plug at the end of the show where you can ask us all the questions. Tannehill once again made his case for such a distinction and a completion of 73.2% of his passes of 364 yards and 4 touchdowns to 1 pick. And he also orchestrated, a game try and drive at the end of regulation and then drove the Titans down the field in overtime for the win. I mean, Tannehill, I mean, when you look at this, he has 4 game-winning drives in 5 games for the Titans this season. When you look at it as a whole, Tannehill is on pace to throw for 4,377 yards and 41 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. Put some, honestly, I just think this guy needs a little bit, I was going to say Scottish, wee, but a little bit more love. I mean, a lot of people scoffed at the idea that the Titans paid both. When you look at it, both Henry and Tannehill, I mean, serious money in the offseason. I mean, that's crazy what they paid them. But if you're a Titans fan now, that is absolutely money well spent. Tannehill is, for me, looking MVP candidate after five games. And Henry just showed that how he can take over games in week six with that dominant showing. I mean, it's amazing. And it's amazing that Soup Deep Sun is going to be on the podcast. We've got a little section going on. And it's, yeah, you're going to see how he blends in with what I'm doing. I mean, the parents have proven to be a match made in heaven. It's quite possible Tannehill could see, I mean, two players vying for the MVP in 2020. I mean, you know, Tannehill and Henry. But Mike Abel, with the Titans on defense trailing 30-29 late in the fourth quarter with time slipping, Vrabel pulled off a move that, I mean, it saved the game. I mean, Vrabel had the Titans purposely run 12 men out of 12 field in order to get a penalty that gave Houston a first down but saved roughly 40 seconds on the clock. I mean, overall, I mean that Titans defense, it's on its way to improving after an impressive week 5 performance, and then the week 6 happened. But the Texans moved the ball through the air steadily, leading to Deshaun Watson completing nearly 76% of his passes and finishing, thank you to Pro Football Focus, for 335 yards, 4 touchdowns and a passer rating of 138.9. But in the process, the Texans quickly, they eased the Titans, 21-10 at halftime and nearly won this game. Overall, Houston scored a season-high 36 points in the third, team to drop 30-plus on Tennessee's defence through 5 games. Thankfully for Tennessee, the defense didn't have to see the field in overtime. I mean, Sook, Henry is an absolute beast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that run he made was amazing. And the funny thing is, he doesn't even come across like he's really going at a real high pace. But I just think defenses are just scared to get anywhere near him. They probably saw what happened to Josh Norman, obviously, the other week. And thought, yeah, we're going to stay way back. But even when he sort of strides, he doesn't look like he's being very explosive. Even Kirat sort of pointed out while we were watching that on Red Zone. But yeah, and you go back to obviously the Mike Vrabel call. We actually do go over that in the officiating podcast. So, you know, definitely listen to that.
No. Can you have two MVP candidates from the same team?
I think
does that not just negate itself? You can't.
It's insane.
I understand where you're going with it, but surely if they're both extremely valuable, they can't both be the most valuable. Because would one work without the other?
Good point.
It's interesting. Tannehill's playing really well, but would he be the same without Henry and vice versa?
I can see Tannehill getting more love just being the QB. I can't see Derrick Henry sort of getting that love for MVP. It's still too early, in my opinion, to be having these discussions. I know we've actually had those discussions, but you know, it was only a couple of weeks ago we were talking about Josh Allen. So I think once we get to around sort of week 10, I think, you know, at that point, you know, you can start that discussion. But you've got to give Tannehill, you know, his props. You know, he's left off where he was last season, and if not, got better, which I think a lot of people was expecting a massive drop off for him, and it's just not happened. You know, they've stayed on course.
I agreed 100%, but I think when you've got two teams, especially like my Steelers, 5-0, and you've just got explosive players performing at such a high level, these, you know, people will actually say are the MVP, you know, candidate players. Hmm. But we will move on now. Ryan, this is your spot, buddy.
Yes, Ravens, Eagles, and you talk about roller coaster rides. This one's crazy.
Huge. Yeah.
The Ravens were in full control at halftime. 17-0. I mean, they just dominated the Eagles. The Eagles' first half possessions were 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, fumble, 3 and out, 3 and out, turnover, missed field goal. It was just, yeah, the talk about it's such a cliche, but a game of two halves. It really,
I think
was.
You just described Henry VIII's what he did with his wives, didn't he?
Divorce beheaded, fumble. I'm not sure it quite does with that one.
Sorry, Ryan.
It was a bit mental. The Ravens managed to score from Lamar Jackson doing his usual stuff and dancing around, and nobody could get near him. Freed up a tight end. Yeah. And then after the Wentz fumble, the Gus Bus ran in. Ravens were up 17-0 at halftime, which was just, you expected them to go on and do it again. But as we've seen with the Ravens the past couple of weeks, they're really not firing on all cylinders all the time. After halftime, it was actually a massive Miles Sanders run, 74 yards. He made it so close to the end zone, and then the ball gets knocked out as he's going in. Thankfully, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was there to do one thing, at least for the Eagles, and dropped on the ball. That's about all he can do, I think. managed to get the Eagles back in the game a little bit. Ravens managed to reply with a Lamar touchdown. Previously, the Eagles had stopped him from running completely, but he kind of fooled the quarterback spy. I think they'd left a spy in there all game, just watching him. Lamar faked them out, and he runs 37 yards like it's nothing. You can see why he was MVP last year. He can turn a game like that. But then the Ravens go back to how they've been for the past couple of weeks and hurt themselves with penalties. They ended with 12 penalties for 132 yards, which is, it's a full touchdown and a bit. So you can't really be expecting to be dominating games when you're like that. They had to keep settling for field goals, and then Carson Wentz got comfortable. He looked a lot calmer. He had more time in the pocket. Previously, he was just being sacked all over the place. But he managed to break off a big run for 40 yards. There's a huge 49-yard penalty for the Ravens towards the end, which sets up the Eagles' massive comeback. They managed to get in on a quarterback sneak. I don't know where this game went. It was nothing for so long, and then quick as a flash, it was an epic fourth quarter. It ended 30-28 with the Eagles looking to go for two, trying to tie the game. And as good as Wentz had been, he was so bad on that last play. He looked like he had no idea what was going on. He didn't spot the rush coming in. He's running back because Miles Sanders got knocked out of the game is Boston Scott. Boston Scott tries to take the ball. Wentz tries to take the ball. Nobody knows what's going on, and it just ends in a big pile-up on the two-yard line. And the Ravens managed to escape with a win. The Eagles really paid. You can't go down 17-0 to the Ravens, even with the spotty mood they've been in. It was encouraging for the Ravens, I think, but the D just couldn't keep them up, keep up forever. The Ravens was, a pretty spotty performance. 30 points sounds good, but there was a lot of Justin Tucker long field goals in there. The defense came through again, terrorized Wentz in the first half, and set the stage for the victory, really. Up at 5-1 for the Ravens now.
No, well said. And when you think about it, Lamar Jackson had 186 passing yards and a touchdown pass. Carson Wentz, had two touchdown passes despite calls for Jalen Hurts to replace him. Sook, did you manage to watch a bit of this game?
Little bits. Like I said, it was on Red Zone. Lamar, he's not as effective as he was last year. There is certainly something happening there. I think it's not more to do with him. I think it's just, defensive coordinators are working around it. I mean, you're seeing the same with Kyler Murray, although Kyler did have a much better game this week. But you can see in the last few weeks that, these sort of hybrid sort of quarterbacks / running backs are struggling, I think it's...
They're not running the game anymore. Exactly. They're getting through it, but they're not dictating as they were last year, which is interesting. You say Jalen Hurts. Hurts came in for like three plays, and that was the best the Eagles had looked for most of the game. And then Wentz came back in again. Like, it was a blink and you miss it. I was like, what's going on?
I never understand that. But I think wasn't Wentz hurt on one of the plays? Or
I think he was knocked up. He was definitely knocked down for a bit, and probably in the tent for a little bit, and then once it was mid drive, they put Wentz back in. So it could get a bit interesting. You know how the Philadelphia fans get; they are very passionate. So
I can see it happening.
Has a few more first halves like that, definitely. Sook, I think we're on to you.
Yeah, so we've got the Falcons and the Vikings. So this finished Falcons 40, Vikings 23. Falcons move on and get their first victory of the season. So absolutely fantastic performance from a Falcons point of view. The fact that they managed to hang on to a lead, a very big lead, it's not me just trying to sort of mock them. I honestly, you've got to give them credit, because from a psychological standpoint, that when it's happened one too many times and then you start seeing the trolling and everything come in play, you do have that fear factor. But they were helped a lot by bad quarterback play from Kirk Cousins. I mean, if you look at the way the game went, the first snap of the ball, Kirk Cousins was intercepted. He was looking for Justin Jefferson, which continues to be quite a big theme there. I think, defensive coordinators will note that Kirk Cousins seems to be looking at his direction quite a lot. There were two Falcon players in and around Justin Jefferson, and sort of Deion Jones sort of tracked back. Great tracking by him, to be fair. And I don't know what Kirk Cousins saw in that pass, but literally was straight at Deion Jones and, an early interception for the Falcons. Early on, the Falcons were using Todd Gurley in the running game, although he wasn't sort of very effective when you look at sort of the stats. But I think early on in the first quarter, he was, used, quite effectively. And then they get towards the opposition half. Matt Ryan, 3rd and 11, touchdown throw to Julio Jones, which was a 20-yard touchdown throw. Julio Jones's first touchdown for the season. Obviously, he's had his injuries, so that would have definitely done, given him sort of the world of confidence. And I think when you have someone like Julio Jones, there and he's fit and raring to go, I think that's going to breed confidence, not only on your offense, but your defense are going to see that and think, okay, it puts less pressure on a team. So I think having him back now is definitely going to, help their offense and the team overall. They got a field goal and took an early 10-0 lead. Vikings weren't really doing anything on offense, but then Brian Hill rushed and he lost the football, causing the Vikings to regain possession. That was just before the end of the first quarter. He was tackled from behind, really. And, one of those where if you're not sort of prepared for that tackle from behind, you there's only one thing that's going to happen, and the Vikings have regained possession. In the second quarter, Cousins did a very nice play action pass to Justin Jefferson, who he's tried to find again. Jefferson did try and stretch for the touchdown. It just wasn't good enough, unfortunately. Vikings at that point, they have a situation where it's 4th and goal. And rather than go for the field goal, they decided to actually go for it. They were unsuccessful, which once again brings further confidence to the Falcons' defense. Alexander Mattison was a bit quiet. I think he had one long run throughout the game. Very disappointed in him, given the fact that they like to use the running game quite a lot. With Dalvin Cook out, a lot of fantasy experts have picked Mattison to have a good game, but he obviously, just wasn't up to par on this occasion. Trying to figure out how many rushing yards. I think he got 26 rushing yards and 10 attempts. So, that's pretty poor. Nothing, pretty poor from his part. Kirk Cousins then, second interception. And anyone want to take a guess who he was looking for?
Yeah.
So, another
well pointed out, Ryan. Good.
And then just before that, just after that, then Ryan finds Ridley and they take a 17-0 lead, and they're looking good. And then Kirk Cousins, just before the half, decides, and I'll say this one's probably the least of his fault. That this was more on the Vikings to be. I'm sorry, the Falcons defense to be fair. So Cousins throws a. I actually don't remember who he was looking for. I'm pretty certain it was not Justin Jefferson on this time. It might have even been Adam Thielen, but the ball gets deflected, and it just gets straight to a Falcons player. And when it's not your day, you know, things like that is going to ricochet and it's going to fall to the wrong player. And this time the Falcons had intercepted. So they go in at halftime with, you know, a very big lead. And obviously the talk is, you know, what's going to happen with the Falcons, but they held their own. They took an early field goal, made it 23-0. Cousins then was continuing to look for my man Jefferson, who Kieran will talk about later on in the podcast. So 6 minutes, 25 into the third quarter, finds him. And this time he does stretch and gets the touchdown. And then after this, Matt Ryan, he's in the pocket. I really enjoyed this one, to be honest, this particular touchdown throw. So he's in the pocket. He comes out of it. It's fourth and three, I believe. And it looks at the point that he's going to actually just go for a big run and get the first down. But instead, just before he gets near the line of scrimmage, he drops back and literally just dumps it open to Julio Jones. And he just manages to just run off and fend off all the Vikings defenders for a great 40-yard touchdown to make it 37. Ryan just looked really confident, you know, with having, you know, Julio back at that point. It's the game then moves on and it's 33-7. Cousins then is third and seven, and he finds Phelan. They set up a first and goal. Cousins then find Phelan again and they get the touchdown and the 2-point conversion for Irv Smith. They then go for an onside kick because they're feeling a bit lucky there. You know, it's the Falcons. You never know what might happen. Unsuccessful on this occasion. And then again, it's fourth and one, the Falcons, fourth and one. You think once again, you know, they're either sort of punt or they're going to just go for, you know, a quick sort of sneak in for the first down. But Matt Ryan, he's oozing with confidence and he decides, I'm going to throw it to Hayden Hurst, who is wide open on the left-hand side of the field. And he just sort of runs in for the 35-yard reception, one of the easiest touchdowns you'll ever get from a quarterback and a receiver standpoint. It was just bread and butter for them, really. Kirk Cousins then, garbage time, finds who? Justin Jefferson. And gets the touchdown. And then they go for the 2-point conversion. And guess who they found for the 2-point conversion? Justin Jefferson, exactly. So
that, right there, right there.
And I think that's the analysis, really. It's Kirk Cousins is looking for Justin Jefferson a bit too much, and defenses are reading that. He's had three interceptions in the first half, and interestingly enough, the Falcons scored 10 points in each quarter. So I thought that was quite nice to see on the old box score as well. No, it doesn't really, does it? Imagine having a bet on that.
Yeah. That's a bit too specific. If you put a bet on that,
exactly.
Yeah, big time. You've got a problem. Back to you, Stu. But we're here. We go 5-0.
We already talked about the Titans, mate.
Right in there. And I know that Paul Brown is listening. And what a weekend I had. To be with a guy who is a diehard Browns fan, and just to, obviously I was in Pittsburgh last December, and we beat them, and then obviously the way that the season has come forward, there's no way that I would have ever envisioned that my Pittsburgh Steelers would be 5-0, but the Browns, they've been good. They've been impressive, but they're nowhere close to my beautiful team. But for me personally, you know, if you take out the Ravens, it was a deadlock game. You know, if you look at the AFC North, the Steelers, once again, I mean, we proved, and I'll try not to say Pittsburgh Steelers or my team. I'll try and
remain neutral.
We, the Steelers, are the class of the division at the moment. I mean, we absolutely claim
we
the Browns. Sorry, man, I can't do it. I can't help it. But we rinsed them 38-7. I mean, Big Ben, you know, and company, I mean, they had their way. Well, we had their way. I'm going to do it. Sorry, Sook. But throughout the contest, you're racking up 270 yards of total offense while forcing Baker Mayfield in multiple interceptions. It was a beautiful, beautiful game to watch, especially being a Steelers fan sitting with a really diehard Browns fan. I mean, my Pittsburgh Steelers jumped out to a 24-0 lead, ending Cleveland's four-game win streak, extending the Browns' losing streak at Heinz Field to actually 17 games. It was something I actually didn't know. The first half, it was interesting to watch. We opened up the game by moving the ball with ease. You know, we entered that Cleveland territory. We mixed up the run, ran the pass nicely in the opening drives. Big Ben, you know, found the wide receiver James Washington for 27 yards, setting the team up deep inside the Browns' territory, stalling out after two straight incompletions in the red zone. The team was forced to settle for a Chris Boswell 37-yard field goal. Then the team was forced to settle again. But going in, the Browns got off to a horrific start. I mean, they really did get off to a horrific start. A house of horrors over the past 50. I mean, Baker Mayfield and Cleveland's offense could not imagine a worse start to this. And this was Halloween stuff going. So going forward, on just the second passing attempt of the game, Baker was intercepted by the incredible safety, Minkah Fitzpatrick. And Gareth, I'm sure you're listening, and I'm sure you're listening to this podcast, and we want to get you on as a guest because we miss you. He took it at the end zone to extend our lead, Pittsburgh's lead, for the non-neutral with 10-0 after multiple punts by both teams. Once again, Big Ben and the Steelers' offense were able to find the end zone. He found four different targets on drive, with key plays being a third-yard touchdown plunge by James Conner. James Conner in command. 17-0. After 13-yard grab by the Browns, Rashard Higgins, Hayfield threw his second interception of the game. I mean, I couldn't believe what was happening. Paul Brown was actually literally under his sofa. The Steelers closed out the half with a 28-yard touchdown grab by wide receiver James Washington, and it was a 24-0 lead. And if you've seen on social media, I mean, Paul was just... it was incredible. But the Browns' comeback attempt would fall short on their second possession of the third quarter. The Browns decided to keep the offense on the field after struggling to muster anything up against a stellar, I mean, our defense. I mean, sorry for the language, guys, but holy shit. I mean, running back Kareem Hunt was stuffed by Cam Hayward. I mean, absolutely flattened. T.J. Watt giving the Steelers the ball deep inside the Browns' territory. An eight-play drive that was capped off with a three-yard touchdown run by Gareth, if you're listening again, we've done podcasts earlier, but wow, Chase Claypool. I mean, seriously, this guy is generational talent. We talk about Antonio Brown. We talk about guys that can make a difference to your team. But Claypool finished the day with four receptions for 74 yards and a rushing score. I mean, Case Keenum would enter the game to close it out in the final quarter to give Mayfield absolutely brutalised, ripped apart ribs from RD. However, he was unable to spark anything offensively from the Browns. Keenum finished the day 5 for 10, 46 yards. Benny Snell added a late touchdown run for good measure. The Steelers would go on, obviously, my Steelers, 38-7. As one of the few teams that remain unbeaten through the 6 weeks of the season, my or the Steelers will look to continue our absolutely... this is unbelievable. And I want to just jump in here, but obviously now that we've got the Titans, we've got the Ravens, and then obviously onto the Cowboys, we could get beat off the Titans and the Ravens and then go on and beat the Cowboys. If you were to tell me that it would be 6-2 in 8 games of the season, I would absolutely take it. 100%. It's just amazing. I mean, if you look at the Titans, you know, Mike Vrabel team, they're red hot also. I mean, they're going into a contest with zero losses in the column. I mean, they're 5-0 Bears. They're fresh off an unbelievable victory in overtime against the Houston Texans, which I spoke about before. But the Browns, on the other hand, they're going to have to go back and get a win. And they're going to have to play the Bengals. I fancy the Bengals to beat the Browns. So, over to you. Who's it's next? Ryan. We have got.
It's me. I'm glad you've got
it's
that.
Ryan,
your system.
Can
I'm
we
glad
just
you've got that your system?
me and Ryan would like to apologise to all Cleveland Brown fans.
Profusely.
Yeah. On that analysis.
That was.
It's brutal.
I think you're right, Stu. Cleveland aren't there, are they? I think people thought they were there, but they're not. Yeah. They're not going to be there. So I got the Bengals in my next game, Colts Bengals, and I'm not sure about what you're saying about the Bengals being able to take the Browns, because the Bengals at the moment, I don't know. They're just a little too. They get a little bit too excited at the beginning, and they wear themselves out, and then
yeah,
they just can't keep it up, can they? They can't keep up the pace that they set. They've not got that experience. They've not got the grit in their team to hold on to a lead. It's like what we've seen with the Falcons. Burrow can, you know, throw it out there as much as he wants, but so in this game, the Bengals had a ferocious start, and actually what they did, they hit the run game pretty hard. They managed to go 21-0 up through Gio Bernard, Burrow and Mixon all getting rushing touchdowns. Burrow played his part with some big passes through to Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins, who keeps coming into the passing game a lot more. T. Higgins at the moment, I think he's stepping in for where A.J. Green hasn't been for the past couple of weeks. And then suddenly, after going 21-0 down, it seems like the Colts woke up. And I think the main change in the game was that Rivers, instead of looking short, just decided to start slinging it like he used to do. And he was just throwing it deep. He had 17-yard, 15-yard passes, massive plays. He had a big play to Johnson, who managed to scamper for 55 yards and was so close to getting into the end zone for a really big score, which would have been huge for him. But he set up the Colts anyway. They went crazy wildcat. Direct snapped it to Trey Burton, the tight end, who just pounded his way in from 5 yards out. That was quite impressive.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
It was good. It was good. The Colts just kept going. And I think Frank Reich just said, you know what, Philip, you know what you can do, just throw it. And that's all he did. He kept creating more big passes, lots of big passes. The Bengals just couldn't get going. They managed to get a field goal, but the Colts came back and managed to get it to 24-21 at the half. And I know everybody's probably seen all those statistics of there's been a comeback from teams who've been trailing by 16 points each week. Well, here it was, because the Colts just didn't let the Bengals back in the game at all. Things did calm down somewhat the second half. There wasn't too much to talk about. It is strange how these games go sometimes, isn't it? You can have all this action in the first half and then nothing happens in the second. It's really weird. There was a traditional first interception just after the... So there was a Bengals field goal, and then the Colts managed to go up 27-28 towards the end. The traditional Philip Rivers interception gave the Bengals a chance at the end of the fourth quarter, but Randy Bullock managed to pull the 48-yard field goal to the right. Colts managed to kick a field goal to put themselves 4 points ahead, and Joe Burrow, he put on a very good drive towards the end, but as is the way at the moment with the Bengals, they're just not quite there. He throws a pretty much a gimme interception. The Colts defensive back came flying in and plucked it out of the air. Ends the game there. The Colts managed to come back from 21-0 down to win 28-27. And it was quite an impressive comeback from the Colts, really, because they looked like they were completely out of it for the first quarter.
Yeah. Yeah, and a bit of controversy as well with the Doyle... touchdown.
I saw it the way that you and Roger saw it. I think it's a touchdown. I don't think there's anything really with that. Yes.
Yeah. No. It's a touchdown.
Yeah.
It's a touchdown.
We like a bit of controversy, don't we? We like a bit of it.
It's not sport without controversy, is it? I think actually that kind of brings on to something: is who else is just sick and tired of these 95% winning probability stats that keep getting thrown around halfway through.
Because it jinxes everything, doesn't it?
It's just awful.
Yeah, it really does.
If it was going through statistics, we wouldn't watch it. It's sport. That's why we want to watch. Yeah. We want to watch the inevitable comeback from 21-0 down.
It doesn't take into question your heart, your mind.
No, it's
all of that. It doesn't take any of that into consideration. It's just
pure numbers, isn't it? Which is, not what sport is. But the Bengals seem to have shaken off last week's big rough loss to the Ravens. So they're
Their defense is back to the way it normally is, I guess, because they had a good showing against the Ravens.
Yeah. No. Agreed. But this was a huge win for Phillip Rivers. I mean, he needed this so bad.
I think that's why when they went 21-0 down, I think he literally just said, oh, chuff it. I'm going to start throwing it because why not? Yeah.
Yeah, he had to. He absolutely had to. But over to my boy. Suk,
I've unfortunately got the Lions and the Jaguars. The Jaguars are in a lot of trouble. I mean, at the beginning of the season, they looked very competitive, and I thought, okay, they're not the most talented roster, but at least they're going to give people a game, and they're not going to give up on, the head coach, etc. But all that seemed.
Rookies were playing well. Gardner Minshew was throwing well.
It just seems to have fizzled out already and a bit too early, in my opinion. And, it's very difficult if you're a Jags fan at the minute to be optimistic. But the Lions weren't anything special either, in all honesty. I mean, if you look at sort of the stats, similar numbers to Minshew, but the one thing, obviously, Stafford did do at the beginning in the first quarter, so it was a 3rd-and-7 play. He ran in to get the first down, put the Lions in a situation where, they were close for the touchdown. And then it's 4th-and-goal. The Lions, rather than go for the field goal, which a lot of teams are doing now, actually went for it, and Adrian Peterson then got the rushing touchdown. They used the running game a lot in this game, and this was pretty much DeAndre Swift's coming out party, in all honesty. He's not really performed too well, and he had a massive, massive run early on in the game, which, put him in a good position. And then they were 3rd-and-goal, and he got the touchdown, rushing touchdown, to make it 14-3. Apologies, I've missed out the Jaguars field goal, but there wasn't really much else to say other than that, except
that was his first field goal ever.
John Brown, give credit to John Brown, his first ever field goal in a regular season game. He's only 27, he's only been playing the position for the best part of 5-6 years. He's been in rosters, and this is the first field goal. So give some love to John Brown. So moving on to the third quarter, Minshew, an early fumble in the game in the third quarter resulted in the Lions getting the ball. Matthew Stafford then decides to repay the favour and then was intercepted. The Jags they were 4th-and-4. They attempted to try and get something near the end zone to try and get something from the game, maybe make it a sort of a one-score game. Unfortunately, near the end zone, they couldn't convert. And I think that's a lot of their problems, really, at the minute. Then they're just not getting these third down plays together, on offense and defense. And when it comes to sort of any sort of opportunities they do get, they're unfortunately, scuppering them. Later on, then, Stafford had a massive throw to Mr. Golladay. And that set up a 4th-and-goal later on in that drive, which TJ Hockenson duly converted. Which he's having a steady campaign. I mean, he's not getting sort of the yardage in, but he's definitely that threat when it comes to these short yard situations in the end zone. Hockenson's always there, to try and get the touchdown. Minshew realizes at that point he's doing nothing when it comes to sort of with his arm. So third and three, decides to run it in himself and gets the rushing touchdown to make it 24-10, a bit more respectable there. However, DeAndre Swift then gets his second touchdown of the day, which makes it 31-10. And really, not much too much else to talk about. A bit of garbage time love for James Robinson. So for those of you who have him in your fantasy lineups, you know, I'm sure you were jumping for joy. They failed a two-point conversion. So the game unfortunately finished 34-16. But the Jaguars look bad. I mean, the Lions aren't, you know, very special, to be honest. And, you know, if you look at Gardner Minshew, he, you know, 44 attempts. He was successful in 25 of them, you know, only averaging 5.5 yards. And a QB rating of 40.1, which, you know, leads a lot to be desired. There's not much. Wow. I'm just trying to think of something positive for them. Keelan Cole, I guess, he's doing well. You know, he's catching balls, but, you know, where is the end product? Where is that touchdown? You know, from their perspective. Yeah. So, you know, they've relied on Robinson and Minshew to do that for them. So, they've got big problems, and you know, they're lucky they've got a win, because otherwise they'd probably be in contention for the first pick. I mean, they still could be. I mean, the Jets may pull off a miracle, but, you know, it's not looking good for them. But credit to the Lions, they did what they needed to do. Stafford wasn't overly special, but, you know, Golladay, when you got Kenny Golladay, you've always got a chance. And that running game, you know, 116 yards for Swift and 40 for Peterson, three touchdowns between them. You know, that's using their running game effectively, isn't it?
No, absolutely. And from there, we'll take our first break of the podcast. And for our next segment is to introduce Kirut Puni. And your son
is the same, is the same surname as me, I just realised.
And for our listeners, you're going to now listen to the segment of a seven-year-old kid who absolutely loves the NFL due to his father's obsession.
Oh, he loves it more than me. He loves it more than me, honestly. That kid. That kid surprises me every day.
No, it's absolutely amazing. So everyone, listen to this segment and we'll be back.
Greetings and welcome to the Kirut section for the 4th and Inches podcast. Here Kirut will talk through his favourite quarterback, his favourite running back, his favourite receiver, which can also be any wide receiver or tight end, and best defence of week 6. He'll be going through his favourite players each week. And yeah, it's just something for him to sort of get used to and, you know, enjoy. So welcome to the podcast, Kira. Are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
Are you enjoying a half term?
Yep.
Yeah? You get to watch a bit more American football during half term then, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you enjoy some of the action this week?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So I guess you want to make a start. So tell us about your favourite quarterback this week.
My favourite quarterback this week is Matt Ryan.
Ooh, Matt Ryan? Not Ryan Tannehill?
No,
so,
Matt Ryan.
So why Matt Ryan over Tannehill?
Because Matt Ryan did some good throws, and he had 30 complete out of 40.
Yeah.
4 touchdowns, 371 yards, and the Falcons won 40-23.
And I guess from a Falcons point of view, they've not really had a good start to the season, have they? So, you know, it was very important for Matt Ryan to, you know, help them get that win. Is there any of the touchdowns you particularly enjoyed watching? Which ones were your favourites from Matt Ryan?
The one where he was, like, going out wide, and where Julio Jones was standing there and waiting for Matt Ryan to throw the ball to him. He threw up to him over the defenders, then he just ran for a 49-yard touchdown, I think.
Yeah, and that was a fourth down play as well, wasn't it? So it takes a lot of bravery for Matt Ryan to do that. So yeah, that's a good choice. I mean, and the other thing as well, I don't think Matt Ryan threw any interceptions, did he either?
Nope.
So if you compare that to Tannehill, yes, the Tannehill game was quite special, wasn't it? The Titans, Texans, we enjoyed watching that, didn't we, on Red Zone?
Yeah.
And Titans have got off to a good start, so it's always good to give the, you know, the underdog some love. So yeah, the Falcons, you know, Matt Ryan is your quarterback of the week. Tweet us if you think Kira is right or wrong. Who's your running back of the week this week?
Derek Henry.
Yeah, it goes without saying, doesn't it? I'm not surprised at that. Kira's already a big Derek Henry fan anyway, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, you enjoyed watching him last season, so not surprised. What was it about Derek Henry? Was it just down to that run that he made?
Nah, because he got 2 touchdowns, 212 yards and 22 carries.
22 carries, 200, a lot of twos there, isn't there?
Yeah.
But that touchdown, that rushing touchdown was special, wasn't it? 94 yards. Yeah. Was anyone ever close to even getting it near him?
No.
No, it was good as well. And don't forget, even, we always talk about the, you know, the big touchdowns. You know, everyone loves those sort of big plays where, you know, you get 94 yards, but also the 5 yard the 5 yard rush that you got as well, that was pretty special as well. And obviously with Titans getting that win as well, makes it even more special, doesn't it? And I think, have you got Derrick Henry in your fantasy team?
Yeah.
Wow, so he got you lots of points, didn't he, this week? And even the week before, I think he got 200 yards as well. So it's back-to-back weeks now for Derrick Henry doing a good job for the Titans. So do you think he'll have a good week this week?
Yeah.
You do? We'll be waiting to see. I can't remember who they're playing. I think it might even be the Steelers, but that's not going to be easy if it is them. I need to double-check, actually. But we'll check that a bit later. Who have you got as your receiver of the week, Kira?
Justin Jefferson.
Oh, Justin Jefferson. I thought you were going to go Julio Jones having Matt Ryan. Why didn't you go for Julio Jones?
Because I know he got 137 yards, but Justin Jefferson got 166 yards and 9 receptions.
Oh, 9 receptions. So he caught quite a number of passes as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he did. What did you like about the touchdowns that he scored? So we've seen two of his touchdowns, didn't we?
Yeah, so one was where the defender was... He was going to catch the ball, but then the defender tackled him, but he escaped, and then he went around the other defender and then went in for the touchdown.
Yeah, he did a bit of a big stretch, didn't he?
Yeah.
It was a really good stretch, and I think, I can't even remember if that was even checked by the officials and then ruled a touchdown later on. Can't remember that. And what about the second touchdown?
So the one where... So when he was going to get tackled, but no, he scooted past the player and then he went in between both of the players, and then there was only one player for him to get past, and he got past him and then got the touchdown.
Yeah, I think it was someone, I think it was Kendall Sheffield or someone, yeah, wasn't it? Yeah. So he just managed to escape him. So two very different touchdowns, weren't they? They weren't one in the same, which is always good to see from a receiver, and especially a rookie receiver. Do you think he's the best rookie receiver this season, or is any of the other rookie receivers that you're liking at the minute?
No, I think the best rookie receiver this year is Justin Jefferson.
What are you telling me about another player that you like, though? Who else do you like? It doesn't have to be better than Justin Jefferson, but which other receivers, rookie receivers, have you liked this year so far?
Van Jefferson.
Van Jefferson? Really? He's not really done much, though, has he?
Yeah, but I like Rams.
You like the Rams. What about Claypool and CeeDee Lamb?
Claypool, yeah.
Yeah.
CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah. So quite a number of them. But yeah, Justin Jefferson's definitely standing out from them, isn't he? So yeah, there you go. So your receiver of the week is Justin Jefferson of the Vikings. And who's your defence of the week? I hope you pick the right answer for this one, Kira.
Bucks.
Oh, yes. Why the Bucks?
Because they got 4 sacks, 2 pick-offs, and one of them was a touchdown.
Yeah.
And Pierre Paul forced a fumble, and he had 6 tackles for a loss, and Jamal Dean got the defensive touchdown.
Yeah, so yeah, we call that a pick 6. I think you've heard that one before. Mm-hmm. I know you're still learning the game, but yeah, so we call that a pick 6, and that Jamal Dean was a good touchdown. Not only that, I mean, Aaron Rodgers just looked scared, didn't he?
Yeah,
he looked absolutely scared and petrified to be.
He got battered.
What do you want to tell everyone what the score was before you went to bed? You obviously watched the highlights after, but what was the score when you went to bed?
10-0 to Packers.
Yeah, so you were a bit surprised, weren't you? Would you have thought when you woke up the next day that Packers would have not got any more points?
No, I thought they would have got loads more.
And you had Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback in fantasy as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh dear, that didn't work out well. But let's see what the next week brings. It's been great to have you on, Kira. Obviously, it's been a lot easier to record this week because of half term. So, you know, just want to say anything to the listeners. Just say thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
And I've also got another listener who is my youngest son, Dilip. Do you want to quickly say hello to the listeners?
Hello.
Hello. That's it. Man of few words, Dilip, there, but... He's another one for the future. He's got his little NFL t-shirt on as well. So, you know, certainly we'd love to get him on the podcast maybe in a couple of years' time, just as, you know, alongside Kira. And you never know, he'll be taking over my job. So, yeah, that's the section for this week, folks. Take care. Bye-bye.